But it's been involved with CIA and NSA, and involved with Trump, and involved that ridiculous, like, P-tape, which of course doesn't make sense. You know, whenever there's an eruption in our newsroom, and the younger black staffers, Dean's able to say, like, yo, I worked in newsroom, colleagues might use the word of me, so, like, back down. I think there's, like, a real internal tug of war between, like, the reasonable people and some of the crazier lefty that's worked its way in there in ways that we're deeply unhappy about.
How does that influence you guys up in your
time? Oh, you've read the paper lately?
Once again, Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times journalist Matthew Rosenberg describes to our undercover journalist how he would create ridiculous stories with government officials, no less, that go on to generate national coverage and outrage from the rest of the media.
We do not reveal sources.
Yes. Well, this one I got to be very careful with this guy.
Oh, fair.
But it's been involved with CIA and NSA, and involved with Trump, and involved that ridiculous, like, P-tape, which of course doesn't make sense. Maybe it does. I mean, nobody's ever going to see it if it does. But they involved people claiming they had it, which of course they didn't.
Right.
It was great.
Writing a story about a claim that Rosenberg knew was false. Ironically, he's not all that impressed with the writing talent of his colleagues, including Adam Goldman.
Do they not know what, like, the story is?
That's the problem, is that, like, they're not the clear thinker or something. So, like,
how are they working for the New York Times?
You'd
then
be amazed.
What do you mean?
There's some people who just can't write very well.
Like who?
Like a lot of my colleagues.
Like who? So who I know
Goldman.
Not to write.
Goldman's a terrible, no, he's a really good reporter, and editors do it on her writing form. He's a terrible writer. But he's, like, more than makes up for it with his reporting skills, which are amazing.
Right, but he sucks at writing.
He's a terrible writer.
Why?
He's just not good at conceptualizing things. He's not good with words. So it's a skill. It's a hard one. It's a craft.
As if weak writing within the New York Times top reporters wasn't enough, Rosenberg shockingly comments on our very defamation lawsuit against the New York Times, the one where we got past motion to dismiss in New York State, and the reason why opinion can influence their news telling.
My friend was saying that you guys are in a lawsuit with like James O'Connell.
Yeah.
Who is it?
James O'Keefe. That was a
what?
That was a f*** up. We may well lose that one.
And these are just journalists with opinions?
I think they're human beings. And so if our broader culture is in a moment where everybody thinks they know best, that's going to end up reflecting itself. We're part of that culture. So. I don't think they consciously are aware of these opinions. It's like, you know, you're in half of the world you live in. This is a world right now where everybody seems to think they have the answer.
Rosenberg goes on to attribute this trend of sensationalism to an inner ideological divide that seems to be growing within the New York Times itself, a trend that is testing and may even be driving away the longtime figureheads of the newspaper.
Why is Dean leaving?
Imagine he's tired of this. You know, whenever there's an eruption in our newsroom, some of the younger black staffers, Dean's able to say, like, yo, I work in the newsroom, colleagues might use the word of me, so, like, back down. They're not the majority, but they're a very vocal, loud minority that dominates social media and therefore has this hugely outsized influence. So here we are.
How does that influence you guys up in your time?
Oh, you've read the paper lately?
I try not to, no offense.
Some point, right? That's the worst part. It's like, it's not decided very well. It's almost like nobody's making a decision. Everybody's like, the path of least resistance.
So, does that, like, pay off? Like,
no,
like,
in the end,
viewers,
it does not.
Like, subscribers?
No. I think we're alienating more subscribers than we're getting out of this.
Why?
Because most of our readership, most of our subscribers are prosperous. Most of them, I don't want to hear that they're awful people all the time. And the really woke kind of racial stuff really bugs them. They don't think a world in which everybody's defined by their racial identity is a good idea. The kind of person who ends up in the New York Times is a certain amount of them who are very high achieving, very neurotic people. And you can see it in how they approach the world and why they get freaked out of it. Whereas, like, the rest of us are like, I'm going to go on with my life.
How things are so skewed from one article to the next. And
it's become a real problem, like a really big problem. And it just gets worse and worse. And we have a lot of younger colleagues, and I see we get what we do.
They don't get it?
I mean, there are people in the company who don't. There's like they're not necessarily the reporters, but we do have younger colleagues who, like, if you come out of some fancy Ivy League school, the private school your whole life, there's a certain amount of indoctrination that's gone on. It's subtle, but you don't realize it. And like the mere concept of microaggression is something that's only among normal people, they don't think about it at all. Among people who have to think about it, it's subject of debate. But among a certain kind of academic, people raise that kind of circumstance, it's just a given fact of life. And I'm just like, I don't think it is, actually. But like, that kind of worldview works its way in. It's subtle, but it's there. And you're just kind of like, God, what the f*** are we doing here? And so you've got a small group of this elite that basically they're bullies. You know, we've kind of privileged, and this is where the social media piece comes into it, is like personalities that would have been considered toxic in most places, that would have been shunned, kind of get elevated by social media because you lose the context of what they've done, and you lose, you know, if somebody's behaving the way they behave on Twitter in an office of 40 people, there are going to be social repercussions for that. There's not. You get a hallelujah chorus cheering you on. And so you see a lot of that. It's taken a long time to kind of like sift through it. Because, you know, there are good faith talk of sexism, whatever. But the bad faith stuff can be really hard to sort out in that situation. The bad faith stuff can be really hard to sort out in that situation. And I think for a while there was a real kind of like, you know, let's avoid the fight on this. You know, just give it a little bit. But you just end up keep giving in and giving in to this.